What is happening to farm prices? Is this just a readjustment, or what is it? Are we headed for a farm depression? That is the question. This is America United, the informal discussion program heard on the NBC network each week at this time. Host today is the National Grange, represented here by Albert Goss. Our other guests, Representative Harold D. Cooley, Chairman of the House Agriculture Committee, and Donald Sawtell of the United States Chamber of Commerce Agriculture Committee. Our moderator is David Brinkley, NBC Washington commentator. And now, Mr. Brinkley.
In the last few weeks, we've all seen some rather sharp and rather sudden breaks in the prices of several farm commodities. Our question today is, what does it all mean? Is this going to be a permanent slump in farm prices, or is it a temporary fluctuation, or what is it? We may not find the answers today, but we will hear some expert opinions. To start getting expert opinions, I'm going to call first on Mr. Goss of the National Grange to tell us briefly what he feels about it. Are we headed for a farm depression, Mr. Goss?
Well, we may be headed for a farm depression, and we may not. If we handle the problem intelligently, I think a farm depression and a general depression can be avoided. If we don't handle it well, I think we will land in a farm depression before too many years.
Mr. Sawtell of the U.S. Chamber of Commerce.
In a general way, I think that business interests of the country would agree with Mr. Goss. We have recognized for a long time that agriculture was developing very large productive capacity and might have, in the near future, very large surpluses, which would have price-depressing effects. So we would agree, I believe, with Mr. Goss, that we have a problem here which we have got to face and has got to be handled very carefully in order for us to avoid serious economic trouble.
Thank you. And now Mr. Cooley, Chairman of the House Agriculture Committee.
Well, I think that the situation definitely challenges the finest virtues of our patriotism, and at the same time, it challenges our intelligence. And just as Mr. Goss has said, if we handle the situation intelligently, and I think we will, I see no need for a depression on the farm or otherwise. And in that connection, I would just like to observe that at the moment, domestic and foreign demands upon the products of our fields and our factories are greater at the moment than at any other time in all history. And certainly we should devise some method of distribution which will enable us to meet those unprecedented demands.
Well, Mr. Goss, to get a little more light on this question we're to talk about today, maybe you could look backward for us for a moment and tell us this. Is there any repetition now of the economic patterns we had the last time we had a real farm depression?
Yes, I think there are a great many similarities. As a matter of fact, we're in a period of reconstruction. It's not a normal period. We are, as a nation, catching up with all the backlog of demand over a good many years. Not only are we catching up with a backlog of demand domestically, but we're supplying Europe a tremendous amount of material, both farm products and industrial products. And that was what we were doing to a less extent, of course, after 1920. And when that demand ceased, when we stopped furnishing credit to Europe, when we stopped sending goods to Europe, and all that demand, all that production was dumped back on the market, we went into a depression. Now, that follows every war. And just as sure as we're sitting here, we're going to have to do something to keep up the market for what we are producing, or we've got to reduce production. Now, if we produce production, that means laying men off of jobs. It means curtailing the production of wealth, and it starts the decline. The problem America faces is, how are we going to keep up consumption? How are we going to get a distribution of income so that we do keep up consumption? In other words, how are we going to raise our standards of living so that we can absorb all this excess production and all of us keep busy in industry and on the farm? So far as the farm picture is concerned, it's quite similar to it was to what it was in 1920. We are producing tremendous crops. Our markets are in Europe. And when those markets are turned back at us, we've got to see that something is done to prevent the prices going down to destructive levels.
Mr. Cooley, does it look that way to you?
Well, I agree with Mr. Goss that the situation looks somewhat like it did after the First World War, but the fact remains that after the First World War, this nation sought to isolate itself from the rest of the world. We pulled our ships of commerce from the sea. We lifted trade barriers and high tariff walls around about our country, and we sought to live in great abundance here in America, only to find that we could not isolate ourselves from the rest of the world as we had attempted to do. Now, I think that in this enlightened day, with that experience so fresh in our minds, that we will not again attempt to lift trade barriers and high tariffs and place restrictions and limitations upon world trade. I think we realize now that we must trade with the world if we will if we want to prosper here in America.
Mr. Saltell, can you comment on that?
Well, it seems to me that Mr. Goss has presented the picture pretty well. So far as the main facts are concerned, I think that we are perhaps facing a little different situation in some respects from what we were 20 or 30 years ago. I think we can't think that it's entirely a matter of getting over the effects of the war. I think if we're going to face this situation of the very large productive capacity of agriculture, we've got to recognize that the world is undergoing some very fundamental changes. We can see, as we look around the world, a tremendous increase in industrialization in a great many countries. Some countries are finding increasing difficulties in carrying on the export trade with their with other countries, exporting their products in order that they may buy raw materials. I'm just wondering if we haven't got to look ahead to the time perhaps when many countries, perhaps ourselves included, will begin to experience some difficulty in finding markets abroad for the tremendous productive capacity we have for certain agricultural products. We'll have to adjust our internal balance in some way so that we can use our productive capacity in the ways and for the products that we need without creating tremendous price-depressing surpluses which burden our whole economy.
I agree with Mr. Saltell. We've got to have some adjustments in our production. And I agree with Mr. Cooley. We've got to expand and trade with the world. But we must face the fact that the world hasn't got today very much to pay us for anything which we export. That's the reason we're in the Marshall Plan. We're trying to build the productive capacity of the rest of the world so they can produce enough to trade with us. And that's part of the problem of our whole economy, which will vitally affect the problem of agriculture.
Well, I agree with you, Mr. Goss, that the financial instability of the nations of the world and the exchange problems challenge us at the moment. At the same time, the fact remains that we will not have to create markets abroad. Markets already exist. The fact of the business is people of the world are dying now of starvation. And here we are, discussing in Washington the great problem of agricultural abundance. And I hope you'll pardon me for just reading a little clipping from the Washington Post of less than a year ago from Shanghai, China, April the 8th. Bodies of 405 Chinese infants were found on Shanghai streets in the first week of April. Most of them were victims of measles. Bodies of 26 adults were found. The total of disease, starvation, and cold totals, 7,307 for the first 3 months of the year. 6,957 of the victims were children. Now, as long as people are starving to death in such tremendous numbers, it seems to me that the intelligent people of the world should be able to find some method of distribution that would enable the starving peoples of other lands to use the products of our fields. And I believe that in the months and years to come, we will be able to solve this problem of world distribution of the great surpluses produced in this country.
Well, doesn't that come right down to the question of what can they pay us with? We've got surplus wheat, we've got surplus cotton, we've got surplus in food production. We're supplying a large part of the world with now. It's done on credit now. Someday those bills have got to be paid. Now, what can they ship in here? That seems to me to be the real problem. We in agriculture feel that inasmuch as we have the surplus food, it ought to be more in the nature of raw materials or manufactured goods than shipping in farm products, which would only serve to augment the problem we got. And isn't that the real problem? What can they ship?
That is the real problem. I don't know what they can ship to us from these different countries of the world, but certainly they are producing something that could be used in lifting the standard of living of the peoples of the world. This business of money exchange is something that I don't know anything at all about. But I do know that it's a very complex problem, and it's one which must be solved. Now, I know that back in the days of Hitler, he went on some sort of a barter system. You remember that? Well, the fact is, we wouldn't want to go on a barter system all out, because the fact remains that we have a great storehouse of gold. And certainly we are not hoping that we'll abandon the gold standard and go on a commodity exchange basis. But it seems to me...
You're not in favor of that?
Of abandoning the gold?
And getting onto a commodity basis?
No, I don't think we could afford to do it. Not in our present situation. Ultimately, we might come to some sort of a commodity dollar, but at the moment, I don't see how we very well could afford to do it.
Well, money is one of the means that we've got to use for making this exchange. But after all, the net thing we've got to accomplish is exchange goods, because money comes from the production of goods. And we've got to be able to take something in here beside gold. There isn't enough gold to pay for this, and we've got to be able to take some real goods in exchange for the real goods we ship out. And I don't think we've been doing enough study as to what we can take in.
No, I agree with you. I think that we should devote serious consideration to the commodities that can be brought into this country without breaking down our own economy. I agree with you that we ought not to import agricultural commodities into this country when we have an abundant supply of the particular commodities involved. But we must purchase either raw materials, minerals, or chemicals, or something that we don't have here.
And some manufactured goods,
oh, yes,
too.
Certainly.
But I think that it's largely in strategic materials and raw materials. We've depleted a lot of our strategic materials here to help win the war. And it would seem that the natural flow would be to replenish that to keep up our balance. I'd like to hear what Mr. Sawtell has to say with that. That seems to come directly in the line of commerce.
Mr. Sawtell?
Well, that happens to be a little outside of my line because it's not an agricultural problem. The Chamber of Commerce has been for a number of years in favor of the reciprocal trade program. However, we do have one qualifying factor in there. We believe that in carrying out this reciprocal trade program, there should be a reasonable protection afforded for agriculture and for other industries. We don't believe that we can afford to compete with our agricultural producers by importing raw materials from abroad, We question whether we can afford to compete with our own labor in our factories and industries by importing products from abroad that we can produce perfectly well here. So it's a problem. We're in favor of principle. We're in favor of the practice of it just so far as it can be done without causing injury to our agricultural and industrial economy.
Well, the fact is that we want to export these agricultural surpluses. American industry wants to export the surplus in the industrial output. But as Mr. Goss mentioned a moment ago, we've got to devote more time and attention to what are we able to import so as to enable these people to have dollars to purchase the things that we want to sell to the world.
I don't think we would disagree with that point, except that our domestic market is, I think, the best market we have for agricultural commodities. And we certainly wouldn't want to damage the domestic market for our agricultural products by importing products from abroad and cutting down our own domestic industries.
Well, there is another question, gentlemen, having to do with our original basic question today, about the economic status of our farmers right now. Are they not in pretty good shape, Mr. Goss? Maybe you can tell us about this in terms of debt, mortgages, farm ownership, and such.
Well, one of the most encouraging things we have to consider in discussing whether we're going to have a farm depression is the fact that our farmers are in better shape. Our debt is about half or what it was 10 to 15 years ago, and we got more machinery, we got more equipment, we got more money in the bank, we got more savings. We're in a far better shape to meet an emergency. But we were in pretty good shape 25, 30 years ago, too. And when we had these surpluses dumped back on us, and they were allowed to kick the bottom out of the price structure, we soon used up all of our savings, and we soon went into debt. We lived off of our fat to the tune that we lost $25 billion in farm wealth in 8 years.
Well, Mr. Goss, you do agree that our greatest problem at the moment is one of distribution. We are no longer faced with the problem of production. The American farmer has demonstrated that in war
That's
and
right.
in peace, that production is no longer a problem to us.
That's and right.
Do you agree, then, that our problem really is one of distribution?
Distribution at a level which will enable us to keep up a good production. Yes, at a
That's
price
right.
level which will enable us to do it.
I agree with that.
And we appreciate the starving people in China and India, and we've got to find some way so that we can use what we're producing to help them. And that means takes us back into the import problem which we were discussing.
And we can't depend on the Marshall Plan or any other program of international relief. Those people must produce something that they can send to us in exchange for what we're sending to them.
Yes, and the Marshall Plan basically has as its purpose enabling them to create wealth to exchange with us. They were all shot to pieces. They got to have a start, and that's what the Marshall Plan is doing. But I think on top of that, we've got to have some safeguards. When our crash came in 1920, the prices went out from under everything without any floors or any protection whatever. And we've got to, I think we've learned the lesson on that one, that we can't let prices drop to any such destructive levels merely because suddenly a surplus hit the market all at once.
Well, along that line, Mr. Goss, during the last year, hasn't the government been supporting farm prices at 90% of parity, I believe?
Yes, 92.5% as far as cotton is concerned, and there have been a good many commodities that have been supported at 90% of parity. And that's been a safeguard for the American people. Because if farmers realized, if they recognized the danger of having these prices fall out from under us all at once, they wouldn't have produced this great, the record crops, which have kept prices down where they were and have given us plentiful food to eat. And that's a principle we must protect
above
all things.
Well, Mr. Goss, if I may interrupt you, I'm glad you made that point because I'm very much afraid that the workers in the city feel that these support programs are entirely for the benefit of the farmer. Whereas, a matter of fact, as you say, they have a dual purpose, that of encouraging the farmer to produce so that the city man may have an abundance from which to purchase at a reasonable price. The support program only affects the farmer when the price goes below 90% of parity. And certainly no one in the city or elsewhere has a right to expect the farmer to produce on any basis that's unfair. And it seems to me that the support program is something in which the city housewife should be interested, because it does assure her an abundance from which to purchase.
There has been an awful lot of misrepresentation of the support program. They've called it subsidies, and they've said that it was responsible for holding the prices up. As a matter of fact, it is more responsible for holding prices level than any other one factor.
Well, how many crops, farm crops, are being sold at a loss right now? Are there a great many?
Potatoes, one.
Well, I think the worst crop that's hit is citrus and fruit. That's been terrible. There hasn't been any support price, and the farmers of California got less than 10 cents a box for their oranges on the tree and their grapefruit last year. I don't know whether that would follow the whole year, but for a considerable portion. Freight rates have gone up, marketing costs have gone up, and it just took all of the margin out.
10 cents a box. What would a normal price be, Mr. Goss?
Well, I don't know that I could say normal, but net on the tree, they should get somewhere 60 cents to a dollar a box, I should think. Because, mind you, 10 cents a box, they had to pay all their production costs out of that water and all the cost of raising it. Just an impossible situation. There have been some tremendous losses in grapefruit.
Well, Mr. Cooley, I believe next week, is it Wednesday, you begin hearings on several farm matters, bills. What's that all about?
Well, what we're starting on the 23rd, a subcommittee which I appointed some time ago, headed by Mr. Stephen Pace of Georgia, will start hearings on the Aching Bill, which was enacted in the last hours of the 80th Congress. And in making a study of that bill, and it will be a very detailed and line-by-line study, we will discuss the support programs, the parity formulas, and the situations in which the producers of all the various agricultural commodities find themselves at the moment. And of course, that brings up the question again of support programs, which have been discussed very much back during the campaign and since. We've heard a lot about flexible programs and fixed programs, and the entire agricultural picture will be surveyed by our committee, and a very careful study of the Aiken Bill will be made. And everything indicates that substantial changes will be made in the Aiken Bill.
What is the Aiken Bill? Could you tell us briefly what it is? Some of us, I imagine, don't know.
Well, the fact is, I don't know what it is. It was unfortunately, it never was read in our committee room. It never was discussed in the House Committee on Agriculture. We knew that there was such a bill pending in the Senate, and in the last hours of the 80th session, actually, I think about 5 o'clock on Sunday morning, just before the House adjourned, the bill was brought before the House and passed. It never was considered, and I wouldn't like to discuss it at the moment. That's the reason I appointed the subcommittee. I'm charging them with the responsibility of finding out what the Aiken Bill really is. Maybe Mr. Goss knows a little more about it than I do.
Well, the Aiken Bill was a bill for changing the parity formula and changing the method of price supports. It has some good points. It has some weak points in our judgment. And we're very glad that the House is taking it up. In fact, it was our understanding that being passed at that late hour, as Mr. Cooley has said, that everyone recognized it needed just the kind of overhauling you're prepared to give to it.
I think even the authors realize that because they suspended its operations, you remember.
Unfortunately, I think that the problem is resolving itself into a question of flexible supports or fixed supports. As a matter of fact, we think there's room for both of them if properly applied. And we think there's got to be a broader base than there is under the Aiken bill.
Well, I'm very glad to hear you say that you believe that we will have a combination of both the flexible and fixed supports. Because I think it's rather unfortunate that some of the farm organizations are quoted in the papers and over the radio as being firmly and unalterably in favor of flexible support programs. And then the next thing you see in the paper is that Chairman Thomas of the Senate Committee and Chairman Cooley of the House Committee have come out for 90% fixed support programs, which makes it appear to the public that we are very much in a controversy. But the fact is, I believe that all of the thinking people realize, as you've just said, that we must have a combination of both.
Say, I'm glad of this chance to say one thing to you here right now, Mr. Cooley. You know, the trouble we've had in agriculture so far, we've been looking for some panacea, one thing that would cure all our ills. We followed the McNary-Hogan bill, and then we followed the debenture, and we've always been looking for one cure-all. I don't think any such thing is possible. We got to have a broad program because the thing that'll help oranges won't necessarily help wheat, and the thing that'll help wheat won't help cotton. I'm awfully glad to hear what you've said.
Mr. Sawtell, we haven't heard from you lately. How do you feel about this?
Well, the Chamber of Commerce has no very extensive policy with reference to these price supports, but its position in general is that it is inclined to favor rather lower price supports, which will leave an opportunity for a normal movement of market prices within reasonable limits, though we do not, would not, take the position that prices should be permitted in an emergency condition to fall to disastrous levels as they did in one other time. However, I think I ought to point out here that the Chamber of Commerce and the businessmen of the country are definitely concerned with the program that may be developed because they are fearful that in some way there may be an undue development of governmental participation with reference to these support programs. We believe in the principle of private enterprise, and we believe in that both for industry and for agriculture. We feel that under that system, we have had the greatest development of general welfare that the world has ever seen. We are fearful that if we have a system of price supports that is too high, it will lead to governmental controls which will not be consistent with the democratic principles of government or with the principles of private enterprise.
Well, Mr. Sawtell, may I say that I agree that we cannot afford to have high support prices on any commodity unless the producers of that commodity are willing to try to keep production in line with reasonable demands. Wherever we've undertaken to support unlimited production, we've always come to great grief, just as we have in potatoes and in other commodities in the past. But I'm in favor of fixed supports at a rather high level where the producers are willing to follow the advice of experts and try to keep production in line.
Well, I'm very glad to hear you, Mr. Cooley, emphasize the importance of of the responsibility of the farmers, of their recognizing their responsibility.
That's about all the time we have, Mr. Sawtell. I'm sorry to interrupt. About the only summary we need today in regard to our original question, are we headed for a farm depression? The only summary we need is that we all agree we may or may not be, but we agree that with intelligent handling, it can be avoided. Our thanks for being with us today to all three of you. Here is John Batchelor.
This has been America United, the informal discussion program heard on the NBC network each week at this time. Printed copies of today's forum may be had without cost by writing to The National Grange, Washington 6, D.C.